Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. I'm Laurie Davis, and you're listening to The Laurie Davis Show here on Blog Talk Radio. And today I'm going to do one of my favorite pastimes and activities, which would be storytelling. But these stories are not stories, they're actual facts and situations that occurred while I was working in Eltsipogtuk, formerly known as Big Cove, New Brunswick. I have a lot of stories that I share from my experience. Please feel free to call in at 515-602-9660 and say hello. If you're listening today, I would love to hear from you. I probably won't have time to share all of my stories, but I'm going to start off with a special person whom I met while working on the reserve. And this will give you an idea of the magic of Eltsipogtuk and the experiences I was going to have later on and all the beautiful people that I was going to meet and connect with who would be lifetime friends, Jimmy and Noella Augustine and others, Joan Clements. These are a few of the people that I know. And I actually had the opportunity to visit the community last summer, July 2019. So it was wonderful to go back after 20 years. 20 years have gone by. A whole generation has grown up. So let's go to our first person. I'd like to dedicate the show to the memory of Christine Cooper. Excuse me. Christine Cooper was a teacher at the school in Eltsipogtuk. And I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I know some friends who will correct me if I'm wrong, and that's okay. Anyway, I met Christine at the school. She became part of one of our groups, and I took my programs in there in 1998, and I'll talk a little bit about that later, but I want to dedicate the show to Christine. She passed away in January 2008. She had been a one-time or two-time breast cancer survivor. She'd also been 25 years sober. And the most exciting thing about Christine was, prior to moving to New Brunswick, Canada, she worked in New York with the Muppets. Yes, Jim Henson and the Muppets. And she was Miss Piggy's personal makeup, hair, jewelry. She dressed Miss P for each show. Can you imagine that? But she also had her teaching degree. And the story goes like this, and this is a powerful story. And when she shared it with me, I knew then why, when my feet hit the ground in Eltsipogtuk, I could feel the vibration and I could feel the magic. So Christine's living in New York City, and she and her husband have this apartment with a rooftop deck. And she told me she used to go up there and lay out on her lounge in the sun after a day's work. And this one afternoon she fell asleep. And she had a dream, and it was a dream about she driving down a country road, and on that country road, she was stopped by a group of kids, some brown-skinned boys, she called it, in white ball uniforms, and they had a toll booth there raising money for their ball team. And this came to her in a dream. 7 years later, she and her husband were invited to a wedding in a little community called Shediac, New Brunswick, which is right next door to Eltsipogtuk. Not right next door, but pretty close. On the way to. And they have, as a matter of fact, the best lobsters ever. So they were traveling to this thing. And New York's on the east coast of America, and New Brunswick's on the east coast of Canada, so we're talking about, you know, a trip straight up. And they went to the wedding, and then on the Sunday, they decided to take a drive around. And they got on the little highway, not a highway, dirt road, that goes into Elsie Pugtug. And she said, wow, this is pretty isolated. Like, where are we? Like, we're lost. And they no sooner got on that dirt road when what did they see but a group of brown-skinned boys in their white ball uniforms with a toll booth raising money for their ball team. And when that happened, she knew then she was called there to Elsie Pugtug. And they went home, and she couldn't get herself settled down at all, she told me. She just couldn't rest. And she said, I pulled out my teaching degree, and I applied for a job, and I got it. And she said to her husband, I'm going to move to New Brunswick, Canada. Are you coming with me? And he said, no. And that is how Christine Cooper got to the community of Elsie Pugtug, where she worked in the school for I don't know how many years. Imagine. So when I heard her story, I knew that my own feelings that had erupted when I landed there were real. And I knew then that I had been called to be there as well. How did I get there? The phone rang one day, and it was the director of health services. And she said to me, I understand that you have an empowerment program. And that's something we're looking for. Something new, something fresh. This was 20 years ago. The ink was barely dry on the paper from the first program that I wrote. And she said, would you come and do a presentation for our service providers? Because they would be the people referring members of our community to you. And this has been totally separately funded by what was then known as the Aboriginal Healing Foundation. And it wasn't banned money per se. It was money from the federal government to support sexual abuse survivors, residential school survivors, people struggling with depression, anxiety. And so I would be coming in to provide my programs and work alongside the professionals like the psychologists in the community and other service providers, the mental health workers, addictions counselors, etc. And so that's how I got there. And of course, the staff at the school were very interested in what I was doing. And so we created a group just for teachers. And here was Christine in the circle. And she and I would become good friends, and we would do a lot of great work together in the community. So that's the beginning of the beginning. Now, I had no idea, ladies and gentlemen, what kind of a profound experience I was about to have. Prior to going to Elsie Pugtug, I did not have any connection with any of our native reservations on the East Coast. I had no idea what a residential school was. I didn't know anything. And so this was going to be a huge piece of my education. And actually, when I look back at it now, it was probably a PhD that the community gave to me with the information that I learned about the culture, the traditions, the ceremonies, family units work together, the politics, all of it. And this was going to be my university to educate me on our Indigenous people, not our, the Indigenous people, of our country. So out of that came some many great experiences, and some of them are sad, some of them are funny, and some of them are profound. So there was an elder in the community, and I'll start with Lillian Francis, who of course has since passed. Her family was most gracious to me, and Lillian, 82 years old, decided that she needed to take a workshop. Now, can you imagine? So we created an elders group, and I had about a half a dozen elders who came to see me on Wednesday mornings. And this one particular day, this would be the first, but not the last, Native woman to put me in my place. So Lillian agreed with me. I said, Lillian, you're an elder. I need your mentoring. And she was my great teacher. And I dedicate the show to her today. And she had a big family, and she was amazing. And she taught me lots. So this one particular day, she came into her workshop a bit early. And I said, Lillian, could we have a little chat? And she said, sure. Now, Mi'kmaq is her first language. English is her second language. And that's pretty prevalent in the community. So there was somewhat of an accent there. So when I reminisce and I think of the way she spoke to me and I share that with you, it is not to be disrespectful at all. But her accent and her tone clearly helped me to get the messages that she was giving to me. So I said, Lillian, while we're by ourselves, could I ask you why you would come to a workshop after all these years? And in her own way, she said, Lori, you don't get it. I said, no, probably not. I today will teach you what is an elder. I said, okay, other than just an old person, she said. I said, okay. So she proceeded to tell me, she said, okay, on Wednesday, I come to your program. I listen, I learn. I go home, I get some milk. I have a gallon of milk in my fridge all the time because I have 14 grandchildren at the school alone. And every Wednesday afternoon at 4 o'clock, they have an appointment. I had no idea what she was doing, but this is what she told she was doing. And she said, they have an appointment. And I go home, I make two big pans of cookies. And then they come to the house and I sit them on the floor. I teach them what I learn in your program. This is the job of an elder, Lori, to pass on our stories, our information, our education to our children. I said, oh, mm-hmm. And each time I had a session with her myself, personally, of course, I had to provide some tobacco for that in exchange for that information. That was the currency of the time. So I said to her, okay. And by now, I have tears in my eyes. I'm crying because she's right. I don't get it. And I said, thank you for that teaching. So I had to go into my bag and get out my tobacco. And she said, I tell my children and my grandchildren, if you want a different life, we need new information. Well, I thought, well, that applies to me too. If I want to change things or do things differently, I need new information. Which will bring me to my next situation. So I went into the community. I created the groups. We met at the health center. We met at the school. We met at the elder center. I was all over the place. And Speaking of new information, I'm working with my single moms group. I was in the community about 3 weeks. I used to travel 5 hours up, stay for 3 days, travel back home 5 hours. I did that once a week for a long time. And I had a single moms group, and I had the most precious, beautiful women, young moms in that group. So we're 3 weeks into the program, and I get a knock at the door, and it's the director of health services. And she didn't look too happy, and I thought, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. So after my group, I went down to her office to speak with her, and she said, "We're in trouble already." I said, "Oh, we are?" "Yes," she said. "One of your clients left the group, went down to the band office, and is pounding her fists and cussing in the band office. And she's demanding that those leaky windows in her home get repaired by Friday. And she's been asking for that for 10 years. And now her kids are on puffers and there's mold in the house. And she said, "That's it. I deserve new windows." Where did she get this word "deserve"? I said, "Whoops. Yes, when we're working in our self-worth workshops, I'm constantly reminding everybody that they're worthy, that they have value." And I guess she just took that to the next level. And the director of health services winked at me and she said, "Keep up the good work." Because once we take our power back and we realize that we're worth it, we'll go after it. And guess what? The carpentry group from the community was down on Friday replacing her windows. I love that story. Let's see. Oh, yes. While I was there, at this point in time, I didn't really have a lot of products or workshops created. I had my, what we call our core empowerment program. And I had a program for youth, but I hadn't really tested it out. But by now, the school was in full swing with me. And I thought, let's pilot the youth program here. So I went to Chief and Council and I got permission. And I said, "There'll be no expense on your end. It's something I want to do." I hired a few people in the community to help me. And we put it out to the community. If you have a child between the ages of 6 and 16, we would like to provide them with 10 workshops. And I needed to see if this thing would actually fly. So I knew it would, but you can't just go out there and say stuff works unless you've done your due diligence. So we put it out, and my gosh, we had 72 kids sign up. This was 20 years ago. So it's in May, and the weather's nice, and we're going to be doing it at the school. So the kids would come and line up outside the school. Never missed a beat for 10 weeks. I had this one little girl in the lineup. She was crying. And I went over to her and she was really tiny. And I said, "Are you okay?" And she had a couple of teeth missing in the front. And she was having a little lisp. And she said, "I want to come, but I'm only 5. I'm not 6. Well, how do you turn that down? I said, "When's your birthday?" Pretty soon. I said, "Well, maybe we could make an exception." And she came. Can you imagine? "I'm not 6. I said, "Oh my gosh." My heart sank. I couldn't say no to her. So we started working, and my friend Joan helped me tremendously with that process. Thank you, Joan. It was such a pleasure to visit with you last summer. So we started. And we put the kids' workbooks in a special box that we had made for the workbooks. And they decorated the boxes. And I have framed pictures here of them on my wall, kind of a collage of the kids that were in the program, and they're standing outside the school with their boxes. And one evening, this woman came on the playground, and she was pretty angry. And she was looking for me. I'm always in hot water. What is this? So anyway, she came onto the playground, and she said, "Where's that Lori Davis? I want to speak to this Lori Davis. Who's she?" So I walked over, and I said, "I'm Lori." And she was yelling like I could hear her. I walked over and I said, "I'm Lori Davis. May I help you?" "Well," she said, "I have three little kids in the program, which I'm grateful for, but I want to know what's in those boxes." And I said, "Well, the children have been told that if they choose not to share what's in that box, it's okay. And they have a right to their own privacy. So we're teaching them that they have their own feelings and they're private and they don't have to share them if they don't want to." "Well," she said, "I've looked the house up and down. I can never find the boxes. I don't know where they've put them." I said, "Well, you'll have to ask them about that." I said, "So what? Where's the anger coming from?" "Well," she said, "you'd be angry too. Last Easter, we bought each of those kids a $250 bicycle for Easter. And they take better care of those boxes than they take care of those bicycles. And I don't get that." And I looked at her and I said, "Well, that's a big lesson for both of us, because what you're actually sharing is that what goes on the inside of me is more important than the stuff outside of me. What do you think of that idea?" I said, "Because their little life is in that box." She said, "Wow, never thought of it that way." And she and I became good friends too. So many lessons. And Christine received a position as the health and wellness coordinator in the school. And she said, "I'll take the position, but I won't accept it unless we can implement the youth program." And she had a special locked cupboard at the back of her classroom where she kept the workbook so the kids didn't have to take them home. And she was getting kids saying to her, because the workbooks are a journaling workbook, so, and for pictures they can draw. And kids were coming up to her and saying, "How do you spell alcohol? How do you spell sexual abuse? How do you spell suicide?" And she told me she never, ever opened any of those workbooks to read what the kids had. I'm having a few challenges with my throat right now, and I think it's because of what I'm talking about. It's taking me back, and it's choking me up, mostly with joy, however. Lots of sad things happened in the community while I was there, but mostly for me, it was a joyful experience. So my husband is my chauffeur, and he's driving me every week, and we stay over, and we're starting to meet some really incredible people. And we're going to ceremonies and we're learning the culture. And there was going to be a drumming ceremony at the health center one evening. So we decided to attend. And of course, you cannot go to any indigenous event unless there's good food. So prepare yourself. If you're ever invited to an event, know that going to be eating something. And so this was a special ceremony, a drumming ceremony, and it was the calling of the spirits. And everything is in darkness, and all you can hear are the drums. There's no light. And you close your eyes, and it's welcoming the spirits from the other side, all of our ancestors, etc. So I was having a really beautiful experience. I could actually feel the spirits, and in my mind, I was seeing the blue light, the white light that spirits provide when they come through. And it was my first highly spiritually enlightened experience ever in my life. And so halfway through the ceremony, because in the Mi'kmaq culture, they actually feed the spirits too. If you're having food, you put a plate of food out for the spirits. So we decided we would have a break, and the plates of food were placed outside, and we helped ourselves. And I was sitting, and the healing center there is round, and it's like there's a pit, there's a sunken pit in there. So we're sitting around on the bleachers, but also chairs are arranged all around the top. And so I'm having my snack, and I forget exactly what it was, but you can be sure there was some bannock there. And all of a sudden, from across that pit, this little person, elder, was walking around the circular pit. And before she arrived to me, I knew she was coming to me, because her eyes were focused and she was walking pretty quickly. And she came across and she looked at me and she said, "It's so nice to see you, Thunderbird Woman." Well, now you have to understand, I'm like, what is she talking about? Thunderbird Woman? And here's what's interesting. My husband and I had an old Thunderbird at the time, a red 1966. It was like a classic. And they're like our favorite Thunderbirds. We've had a couple of them. And also around my neck, I had been given a necklace by one of the community members. And on the end of that necklace was a little pewter Thunderbird. I couldn't believe it. I looked at her and I said, "Excuse me?" She said, "We've known each other for a long time." And I was respectful and I didn't want to say this, and I didn't say it, but in my head I'm going, "Are you kidding? I've never met you in my life." Ha! Yeah, well, I guess I had. So that was the night that I received my spirit name, Thunderbird Woman. And I want to tell you, when I went home, back to our room, I said, "Daron, do you actually believe what just happened here?" And he said, "Well, actually, I do. Because you see, what happens when we have a spiritual experience, we want to rationalize it, try to make sense of it, intellectualize it, rather than just receive the gift." So I embraced that. And of course, had long conversations with my mentor, Lillian, about it later. And learning that, wow, when my feet hit the soil every time I'm in that community, and it happened to me again last summer, as soon as my feet hit the soil, I felt like I was home. I see. Mm-hmm. So I was home, and I went home last summer. It was great. And I want to thank Jimmy and Noella for your beautiful hospitality. And we did a memorial feast for the loss of Celine, a granddaughter in the family, whom I had known ever since she was little. It was 20 years later, remember? So my next adventure was going to be the radio station. Ron and I are driving around the community, and there's a little house there with a tower. And Ron says, "Oh my goodness, they have a radio station here." And by then I'd been on the radio very, very little, but I was working a big show, a live talk show out of Halifax, Nova Scotia. And I had a producer and all the, it was mainstream radio. So we had all the equipment and I drove to the studio once a week on Sunday night. I did a talk show. So I was, you know, I was excited to be on the radio and it's my passion and it still is my passion. Today, as you can probably tell, I could talk for a long time. And so I went, wow, a radio station. And the wheels started turning. And I said, now, what's my next move? Because we're in the community 3 days a week anyway. Why don't we do a radio show? So I knock on the door. And a gentleman by the name of Foster comes to the door. And I said, hi, I'm Lori Davis. I'm a radio talk show host. I see you have a radio station. He said, yes. He said, I got a TV station too. I went, wow. Okay. I said, well, what do you have for programming? He said, well, we have music and we do bingo. And I said, how would you like to have a professional talk show once a week when I'm in the community working? Oh, no, no. I don't think that would work. I said, okay. I said, why don't you think it would work? Well, he said, it's a small community. Everybody knows everybody. Nobody would call in because everybody in the community would know who it is. And we're pretty shy sometimes. I said, well, if a talk show wouldn't work, why don't you and I just do a show? And you could speak Mi'kmaq, I could speak English, and we could have the first bilingual Mi'kmaq English radio show in the country. And he loved that idea. So the next week that I went up, I took my producer, Joe, from the big station in Halifax to get us set up. And I said, you know, Foster, just in case there's one person that might want to call in, we should set it up so people can call in. And so in the back room, one of the back rooms of the home, we set it all up. We had a couple of microphones. We had a red speakerphone, duct taped wires everywhere. It was pretty basic, but guess what? It worked. And I told people, if you have a poem, if you have a song, if you have a story, we all have stories to share. This is the place to do it. My people send me in poetry and I had to read it. And it was 3 months of broadcasting because Foster kept looking at me and saying, I told you. Nobody's going to call in. I said, you're right, but we have to be patient. 3 months later, there was a huge, violent, on the dock, boat burning, lobster issue, fish and game in Burnt Church, a reservation north of us. And I went around. And I said to Foster, we have to talk about that today. He said, no, we won't talk about that. I said, yes, we will. We're allowed. He said, okay. So I get on the air and I said, there must be somebody in Burnt Church who could call us and tell us what's going on up there. And I'm telling you, the lights lit up and we started taking the calls. And lo and behold, there were people calling in to tell us what was happening, what was going on. We couldn't believe it. And after that, I had a roster of 60 regular call-ins, 60 people in the community who phoned in on a regular basis. I still have that list. I keep everything that way, records. So we were on our way. And the next thing we know, we've got this talk show happening. Now, this is the fun part. I'm on the air. People are hearing my voice. And after a particular show, this woman came to the door with a plate of traditional food, which I love. I had learned to love moose meat, bannock, oh my gosh, fish. Well, we ate fish at home a lot anyway because my mother's people are all fishermen. So this woman, Foster said, this woman wants to feed you. I said, great. He said, come on out and meet her. So I came out around to the front door and she took a step back and she rolled her eyes and made kind of a scowl on her face. And I said, are you okay? Oh, I can't believe this is Lori Davis. This is you? I said, yes. Well, I can't believe it. I said, what's wrong? She said, I thought you were tall. I thought you would be blonde. I thought you would be skinny. With that voice, that's how you looked to me in my mind. I said, oh my gosh, thank you. I'd love to be tall. I'd love to be blonde. Well, I don't know about blonde, but anyway, I'd love to be thin. But I'm not. I'm 5 foot nothing, dark hair, and overweight. But may I still have the plate of food? And she said, oh my goodness. Yes, of course you can have the food. Wow. I had so many experiences on the radio. One day, because radio is media, it's very powerful. And with technology today, like just think about that setup that I shared at Foster's compared to where I'm broadcasting from today on my laptop, worldwide technology. I can handle all the calls that come in. Oh, and by the way, if you want to call in, you still can. The number is 515-602-9660. And if I have any of my friends listening in from the East Coast, because I let them know about the show, please call in and say hi to us. So when I think about the advancement of technology, the media is very powerful, and we need to use it more to support what it is we want to say out there and what needs to be said. So this one day I get on the air and I said, okay, it is a beautiful day. And I know we have young moms in the community who have little babies in strollers. I would love to meet some of you after the show today. So let's get up, get dressed, get our babies looking really cute, and get out for a walk. That's all I said. And I remember that particular day, I finished the show, I opened the front door, and here were all these moms with their babies in strollers talking to each other, out walking. You see how powerful our stories are, and we need to share more of our stories, which is why I decided today I was going to be a storyteller today and share my beautiful lessons and experiences and people who changed my life forever. This community changed my life forever. Because on the professional side of things and the business side of things, this brings such credibility to me today, 20 years later, when I'm approaching other Indigenous communities about what we have to offer. And I have built so many wonderful relationships all the way to the north, all the way south to the Navajo community in New Mexico, to the west, the Cree Nation here in the west, and to the east. And that experience in Elsie Pugtuk gave me the confidence, the information, the knowledge, the experience, that I was going to need for my work down the road that I had no idea about at that time. In debt, gratitude for everything that happened while I was there. It's amazing to me. I have so many other stories. I remember sitting down, which affected my professional side. I remember sitting down with Jim. I don't know if Jimmy remembers this or not. But at that time, I had just started my business. Well, we'd been in business about 5 years. And it was really, I was really confused about how I wanted to grow my business. I had a big retreat center. Many of the community members came down for work at my retreat center as well. We traveled back and forth. We became friends. We housed people. It was just a beautiful thing. So I said to Jim, I'm just really not sure how to run my business. Do I do network marketing? Do I have a retail outlet? And I want to talk a bit about Jim, because Jimmy traveled with a band called Eagle Feather in the 80s. They traveled all over the world for 15 years. And they wrote their own songs, created their own albums. And I've been blessed with two of them, three of them actually. Amazing musicians and songwriters. His sister, Donna Augustine, who also is renowned in her own right because she has traveled the world sharing traditional teachings to the people who need that and who are so very much interested. And she is so knowledgeable, and I'm going to have her as a guest. I just know that this particular family have so much to offer. So Jim and I, he had once been a council member too, so we would talk business, and they have their own business. Jim's an entrepreneur, has his own studio in the basement, and helped me to record some materials and make some CDs, and it's a beautiful thing. So he said, well, Lori, you know, there's two ways to do business. And if any of you know Jimmy, and I hope he's okay with me talking about him on the air, because he's not a silent person. He says what he's thinking. But Jim, you have no idea how much you taught me and how it affected how I did my business for years after. And he said, well, you can do business the white man's way, or you can do business the Indian way. And that's exactly how he said it. So if anybody's feeling that I'm politically incorrect at that time, this is how we talked, right? He said, the white man brought, with European contact, they brought their own system, which is a pyramid. So if you draw a pyramid, looks like a teepee, but it's not, and you have your people at the top and your directors, and it's all very functional to a degree. But he said, you know, circles intersect. So you do groups and you do your group in circles, and you could run your business that way. And there's no one in the circle more important than the other person. This is the difference. So traditionally, communities would meet in a circle, and in that circle, there could be the chief, there could be an elder, there could be an 8-year-old boy, there could be a medicine man, there could be a mom, sitting around solving the problems of the community. And if somebody had to step out, if that mom had to step out and go get a meal or whatever, someone else could step in. So the circle was always complete. And no one person in the circle is more important than the other. And I loved that. And that's how I built my business, creating circles. Circles and circles and circles. Circles have gone to Asia. Since my experience in Elsie Pugtuk, my core program has been translated into French, Chinese, Spanish, German, and have been giving some thought to indigenous translations like Cree, for example, where I am here in the West. And I've built hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of circles. And then the circles finish what they need to do and we create a new circle. But circles intersect. So if I have a circle in the West and I want them to meet a circle in the East, they can come together and do that because each circle has been treated the same way. And that's how I built my business. So I had lots of great training on the professional side of things. And for that, I will always be truly grateful. Even though I've had people try to force me into that box, into that pyramid, I still, 22 years later, facilitate that program every week. And I'm still doing that work. And people say to me, well, you should be in some kind of ivory tower somewhere, CEO running the company. And I'm going, no, I can't go there. And I'm not going there. And in 2002, little plug for me, we embraced voice technology. So we've been delivering our workshops online since 2002. And for that, I'm extremely grateful. And the reason I was able to do that was my small circles of six people at a time. So thank you. Thank you, Hi Hi and Cree, for everything that Elsie Pugtug did for me in 1998 to 2000. They think I did something for them, but in fact, I was the beneficiary. So last summer, I had the pleasure, after 20 years, of visiting the community. I have to tell you guys, I did not recognize the community. Drive in that dirt road, which is now paved. The streets are paved. The sidewalks are there. It's all curbed. Any reservation I've been on in this country, the roads are probably the worst part of it. But here are these paved roads. There's a big strip mall where you go into the community. There's a convenience store. There's a pharmacy. I couldn't believe it. There was nothing there but an abandoned building when I was there. There's this gorgeous little coffee shop in the town site. These lovely little homes with the gardens and the lawns and the flowers. I didn't know where I was. I thought I was in Fantasyland somewhere. But a generation later, you see what can happen when people know they have value and they're worth something more. We can change the world that way. One person at a time, one family at a time, one community at a time. And when anybody comes to my home, Elsie Pugtug is well represented here. I have photographs. I have a huge, beautiful mandala I bought at a powwow in Millbrook, Nova Scotia. And Jimmy was the MC at that powwow, if I recall. And I have native art everywhere. Because when I believe in something, I'm all in. I believe in the indigenous people in our country. They have suffered, sacrificed, strived, and I know I have not had the experience of what it's like to be a native person in this country. But I'm here to tell you, you have to be strong to have survived everything that they've been through. Mm-hmm. And I know that everything that they get in the form of money, resources, that's the very least we can do. The very least. And I always like to dispel the myth, and I did this on my show last week when I did my monologue on the residential school system in Canada. If you haven't listened to that show, it's archived. You can go back in and listen to it. And I made it clear last week, and I'll make it clear this week, that not one penny of our tax dollars in this country go to supporting Indigenous people. So for all of us out there who don't know any different than that, please let me reiterate that. They are funded totally through treaties that were signed, where they are entitled to resources. That's everything from oil, diamonds, whatever comes out of the ground, lumber, fish, hunting, whatever. All the resources, they're entitled to that because that was the trade-off for the land. And some of those treaties have not been honored. So, in fact, the land has been stolen. So there's a lot of history that we don't know about. My dad grew up in Stewiacke, Nova Scotia. 10 minutes down the road was the Shubenacadie Residential School in Indian Brook. I didn't even know it was there. Mm-hmm. So let's get mustered up and let's learn some stuff. And I learned so much. I am so grateful. And my heart is there. That's where I want to be, where I need to work. And so I want to just let you know that when you open your mind and you're willing to open your heart to learning, that takes away all the fears, because fears are just that which we know nothing about. And when we don't know something, we fear that. So I believe it's our responsibility to be part of the resolution, the reconciliation, the solution, and support in whatever way we can, so that as a nation, Canada, we can all move forward, especially in these difficult times. So, Elsie Pugtuk, I sure hope I'm saying that correctly. Oh my gosh. Jimmy will let me know, I'm sure. And I'm grateful for the time that I spent. That's one of the highlights of my life, having spent 2 years there. And thank you so very much. Tomorrow on our show, we'll be welcoming Dr. Tracy Tremendous Jones. What a delight, the daughter of the famous Charles Tremendous Jones, whom I had the pleasure of meeting, actually. I met Charlie Tremendous Jones at a conference. And he was an avid reader. I believe on his death, he had a library of over 100,000 books. And he was an author. And he owned a publishing company. And Tracy has stepped in as the second generation. He has passed, of course. And she's a lot of fun. And so tomorrow, if you have any desire to write a book and get it published, this is the girl that can tell you how to do that. So I'm looking forward to our show tomorrow. Thank you for listening today. I'm Lori Davis. You've been listening to The Lori Davis Show here on Blog Talk Radio. It only takes a few minutes for the show to load, and then I put it up on our Facebook page, The Lori Davis Show Facebook page, and that's where all of the news is, all of the updates. So if you're not a member, please put in a request, and we'll certainly approve that. And that's where you can find all the other shows, too, that we've done so far. Thanks for listening. Bye for now, and talk to you tomorrow.